Okay, sheet 26. As I said, I'm sure you had a lot of fun with today's sheet. There were some interesting excursions into Ketav Ivri. This whole sugya is one which is not only historically interesting, because at some point things change. We dig stuff up from under the ground in this country, which is thousands of years old, on a regular basis. Things which we dig up from the first and early second temple period are always written in Ketav Ivri. They're written in the Hebrew Paleo Canaanite scripts, whatever you want to call it, the ancient Hebrew script. That's what the stuff that is carved into rocks. That's what it looks like. The Dead Sea Scrolls, which come from the end of the Second Temple period and the post Temple period, are a mixture of Ketav Ivri, Ketav Ashuri, stuff which post dates the Churban Bayis Sheni, tends to be all Ketav Ashuri. So something changed along the way. How did it change and what changed? This has also important modern-day implications. When you go to Shurim on the mystical meaning of the Hebrew letters, which you may have come across before along the way, that the Hebrew letters are made up of other letters, Aleph is made up of Vav and two Yuds. You come across this kind of idea? This is a very well-known idea, and it's based on serious sources. How does that work if the original Hebrew was Ketav Ivri? Because Ketav Ivri doesn't have any of those inner resonances. What's that? Who said it was? And therefore, we have to look at the sugya and see how that works. Right. So to clarify, the writing we use today is Ketav Ashuri, okay? The Assyrian text, so-called. We'll have to see why it says it's called that. The writing, the new stuff that I brought you, is all what's called Ketav Ivri. I brought you these charts on page 2 of the different forms. There are slightly different versions, but they're all very similar, of Ketav Ivri. You can see some of the letters look quite similar. Some of the letters are completely different. For example, we'll see later on, it becomes relevant, the ayin in Ketav Ivri looks like a circle, looks like a samach that we would have today. Nachon? The taf, the final letter in Ketav Ivri, looks like a cross, an X. Whereas the shin in Ketav Ivri looks pretty much exactly like a shin. It looks almost exactly the same. So some of the letters are similar, some of the letters are quite different. The little message I brought you on the back, which you worked out at the beginning, you worked out the whole thing. This, of course, is the name of the school in Ketav Ivri, and maybe we should put up a sign outside the school saying that's what we call, and see what people say about that. Let's look at the first part of the sugya in Sanhedrin, because this is really where it's all happening. Let's read this quite quickly. Number one, Amar Mar Zutra, V'item Amar Ukva. Now, Mar Zutra and Mar Ukva are Amoraim. They're not Tanaim. They're Amoraim. Therefore, they're later in the Masoret, if you like, in the time of the Gemara.
Can you remind us more, which period was Ashuri and Ivri, in terms of the second temple was Ivri, what was
the... It's very easy. First temple was Ivri, second temple was crossover, and after that was all Ashuri. Okay? It's not complicated. Bitchila nitna Torah Yisrael b'ketav Ivri v'loshen HaKodesh. Says Mar Ukva, originally the Torah was given to him in Ketav Ivri, in the ancient script. When I say Ketav Ivri now, you know what I mean. It's not today's script, it's the squiggly wiggly script that we saw before. V'loshen HaKodesh, but of course in Hebrew it said, V'yomer Hashem El, whatever. Fine. Chazra v'nitna lahem b'yimei Ezra b'ketav Ashurit v'loshen Arami. When they went to Babel with Ezra, the Torah, or when Ezra was in Babylon, he came back with them, the Torah was by this time in a different script. It was in the script we use today, the modern day script. Modern day, this was 2,500 years ago, but we've got long memories, okay? It was in the new script, and it was also translated into Aramaic. Why was the Torah translated into Aramaic? Why? Because that's what they spoke, and they lost the ability to speak Hebrew. They were in exile, they assimilated very, very quickly, so the Torah was put into Aramaic. Fine. Biru, they chose when they came back to Israel for the second temple, Biru lehen Israel, Ketav Ashuri, they chose to stick with the Assyrian scripts, with the scripts we use today, but they said, we want Loshen HaKodesh. But we want Loshen HaKodesh. In other words, the Torah has to be in Hebrew. We can't have a Torah which is in Aramaic. The Aramaic translation remained as what we call today the Targum, which eventually became Targum Unclus, yeah, on the Torah. Okay, so they had the Targum still, but they said the Torah has to be in Hebrew. We can't have a Torah being read in Shul in Aramaic. The Hinichu leHedyotas Ketav Ivrit, and to the Hedyotas, which we'll see who they are, to the lower classes, to the normal people, they left the original Ketav Ivri, and Loshen Arami, and they left the Aramaic language. Meaning, the standard everyday stuff that was written, contracts, this, that, and the other, was written even in the Second Temple period in Ktav Ivri, was written in the ancient scripts. So that's one of the reasons, according to this, why we dig things up from the First and the Second Temple period, written in Hebrews, in the ancient Hebrew scripts. But by the time of the Second Temple, the Torahs were written already in Ktav Ashuri. Okay. Man Hedyotis. Who are the Hedyotis? Amar Rav Chisda Kutai. They were the Kutians, or the Shomronim, who came from Kuta, or the Samaritans. These are all the same people. Who are the Samaritans? I think I've mentioned them before, right? Did I mention them before? The Shomronim. Who are the Shomronim? Look for a second in appendix number one. Appendix number two. Let me show you what I put here, because you probably didn't get to it. Turn to the very back of the sheet. Flip to the back page. The Shomronim, the packet, the very back page of the whole packet, for a second. So appendix number two. The Shomronim were an enormous group of people, okay? I brought you in 22, the Pasuk in Malachim, when it says, Vayavi melech Ashur mibavel umikuta, okay? He brought from these places, Kuta, a whole group of people, the Yoshev Ba'ari Shomron, and he settled them in the cities of the Shomron, Tachat Bnei Israel. One of the things that the kings of Assyria did when they invaded, they took away the 10 tribes from the north of England, from the north of, not England, from the north of Israel. Okay, when I say the word north, I say the north of England. There was a time, by the way, you should know, this, that was just a mistake, but there was a time when the English thought that they were the lost tribe, that they were coming from England, okay? And the, and when Shabtai Tzvi was claiming to be the false Messiah, and people were getting all messianic, they said they'd seen the lost tribes on ships returning from Scotland. I don't know about that. Hello there! We're the tribe of Dan, you know. That would be a big shock for everyone's messianic expectations. So there were periods where, sorry ladies. So the Shomronim were settled. The king of Ashur took away the people that lived in the 10 tribes, and he brought, instead of his, their, if you like, methodology in conquering lands was to mess everybody up. Bilbil, almost. He messed everybody up. So that's why now today, Lahalocha, we don't know who are the Malekim, and we don't know who the Moavim, and Lahalocha, none of these people are really there anymore, because they were all messed up by the Assyrian kings. So these people who live in the Shomron were a very big group of people. They were Gerim, they converted to Judaism, but they're what's called Gerim Arayot, Arayot with an Aleph, meaning Chazal say they were converted to Judaism because they were scared of, there were lots of lions and beasts and all sorts of stuff in the north, and they were converted because they were scared that the land was only friendly to the Jews, and if they weren't Jews, then they wouldn't be able to settle there. So they converted to Judaism. So there was always a Shiloh through the whole of the Second Temple up to Chazal period, whether the Shomronim were legitimate Jews or not legitimate Jews. They were Sophet Gerim. Eventually there was a decision, a psak made, that they were not Jewish. But the Shomronim, of course, considered that they were Jewish. And they were a very, very big force at the time of the building of the Second Temple. They opposed it. They were writing to the Persians saying, we don't want these Jews back because we are the real Jews. And don't let them back in when they came back from Babel. Eventually we managed to build despite their opposition. It's never been easy to set up a state in this part of the world. There were lots of people trying to stop us then. Later in the time of the Hashmonaim, there were major wars against the Shomronim. Eventually the Shomronim were very much wiped out by the Romans. When the Romans came in and destroyed everything, they destroyed a lot of the Shomronim as well. So from a massive group of people, a really big part of the Jewish, of the population, Jewish question mark, population of Israel, they are now a tiny, tiny, tiny group of people. Of a few thousand, but they still exist. Which is amazing, because they're almost like, the Shomronim today are almost like a living fossil from 3,000 years ago. I mean, some people say that about the Jews as well. But, you know, we've kind of developed over time into the Jews that we are today. The Shomronim live in the north of Israel. They live in a place called Shomron, okay? And you can go visit them. I went to visit them a number of years ago. These photographs are taken from my visit, at least three of them. The bottom left one was it's very hard to see them, I'm sorry. You can go online and you can see them better. Well, not the ones that are mine, but the other ones. And the Shomronim live, and they live a life, they say, of pure Torah Shebichtav. They don't accept Torah Shebaal Peh, which is not true, because I spoke to them about it. I'll tell you in a second what happened. And they live in these little villages. One of the problems is they say that they are the real Jews, and we're all imposters. They're now narrative is not the same as the Tanakh. Their narrative is that they were part of the tribe of Ephraim, and then there was a big split at the time of Eli HaKohen in the period of the Shoftim, and Eli HaKohen got Broigus, and they took everything down to Yehuda, and they were there left as the original people up with Har Gerizim. Har Gerizim being the central holy mountain of Israel. Now, of course, Har Gerizim was the mountain that we went to, Har Eval and Har Gerizim, when we went into Israel to do the whole brit there of the mountains. But they claim that Har Gerizim was always the main place, and we broke off and went down south to Har Amoriah. And they claim that therefore they are the Jews and we are, well, you know, maybe Jews. It's like the opposite way around. But of course, there's hardly any of them there. And they won't marry Arabs. They will only marry each other or Jews. They will marry Jews. But Jews won't marry them. So they are a bit stuck, because they won't marry Arabs, and we won't marry them. So the only people left to marry are either, they marry secular Israelis who don't care that much and they'll marry them, but there aren't many of those either, because even secular Israelis tend to marry Jewish. So they marry each other, and they have the most horrendous inbreeding genetic problems. And you can see, when you see the kids, they've got massive skin problems, they've got bone feature problems, there's major issues, because they're literally all marrying their, you know, first, second cousins. Yeah.
Do they still have their own symbol?
So this is what they have. So they have on Har Gerizim a sort of sanctuary place which is knocked down. It's not a built temple anymore. The Arabs hate them. They have a lot of trouble from the Arabs. They live just above Shechem. It's a very beautiful part of the world. Looking down into the valley, into Shechem, between Har Gerizim and Har Eval, you mamash feel you're standing in the middle of Tanakh when you stand there. I've been on a few Tiulim up there. It's a little bit tricky to know where you're going, because it's sort of pretty close to some unfriendly people. But the Shomronim are perfectly friendly. We went to see them on Sukkot. We went on an organized trip, an Israeli trip to see them. We went to sit in their sukkah. So it was an opportunity to ask questions. So the guy, first of all, he brought out his little girl who was learning in the school there. And this was their chumash. This was their Bible, as it were. It was written on cloth, or written on parchment, but in a book form, not in a Megillah, not in a scroll form. And they only have the first five books on Yoshua, as far as I'm aware. And she was reciting, of course, the way that they pronounce it is very different, so I couldn't really understand a lot of stuff she was saying. But then we got to ask some questions in Hebrew. The first thing I said is, well, we're sitting in a sukkah, why is the sukkah in the house, not out of the house? So I thought, because it was inside, fruit hanging down from the ceiling, inside the house. So I thought he was going to give me a whole long, longish, like, well, according to the pshat, he's like, so he said, well, we used to make them outside the house, but then the Arabs threw stones at us, so we started making them inside the house. So I was a bit disappointed about that. I said, look, I was trying to get to an Orthodox Shomri, not a Reform Shomroni, you know, whatever, so I want people. So anyway, fine. So I said to him, do you have separate meat and milk? So he says, oh, yes. I said, do you have separate dishes in the kitchen? He said, of course. I said, why? It's not in the Torah. There's no way in the Torah that it says you have to have separate meat and milk dishes. So he looked at me and he said, he was a very nice fellow, and he said, I don't know, I have to ask the Kohen Gadol. Because they have a Kohen Gadol, who is basically the rabbi, who is the Kohen Gadol. They do the whole Korban Pesach, not on the same day as us, but they're up on Har Gerizim, and everyone goes to watch them. You know, Israel.
So cool.
And why is it not cool that we do it? But whatever. But they do it still. You're right. It is quite cool. And they have this Kohen Gadol. They're not Jewish at all. By this time, 3,000 years later, they're not Jewish in the slightest. They consider themselves Jewish, really authentic Jewish, but there's hardly any of them left. And
they're always want to marry a Jew,
they would have to do a Geirus, yeah. And they couldn't still be a Shomroni. For example, when it comes to the mezuzah, they write in scripts over the door. Al mezuzot beitecha, over the post of your door. So they write it out in Kitab Ivri. And that's the fun thing about going there, is that everything is written in Kitab Ivri. They don't use Kitab Ashuri. So all the shop signs, all the you know, everything there is all written in Kitab Ivri. So if you ever want to work on your Kitab Ivri, that's a great place to go and see the Shomronim. So when it says in the Gemara here that Kitab Ivri was left for the Shomronim, for the Kutim, they're there right now using Kitab Ivri, and that's mamash exactly what happens.
If they want to convert to Judaism, they have to go through the whole...
Yeah, have to go through a normal Geirus. Okay, but they keep them all in a very non-halachic way, so... just like a Karaite would have to go through the same process. Right. Oh, that's not so posh what happened with Ethiopians. Rav Avadia said that the Ethiopians were didn't need to have Geirus, and indeed Rav Avadia was loved by most people, but by the Ethiopians in particular. And when he died last year, in the Shiva was in Har Nof, because he lived in Har Nof just up the road, there were buses and buses and buses of Ethiopians coming, of Ethiopian Israeli Jews, coming to pay the Shiva visit, because for him, for them, he was the mamash, the person who gave them the ability to integrate more, in the, although that has been more difficult than they wanted. Yeah.
How did the Kohen Gadol process work? Is it just the son of the Kohen
Gadol? I have no idea. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to ask all the questions there.
Did
I don't know how they
choose.
I didn't get to meet the Kohen Gadol. Sorry. I'm not sure he's interested in tourists. I mean, this guy was like a user-friendly, very friendly people, though. Very, very friendly people. Let's go. So, fine. So that was the Shomronim. I hope you don't mind that little excursion, but it's an interesting place. Yep, yeah, 3,000 years they've been there. No, I mean, almost 1,000 people left, and there were hundreds of thousands originally. Mike Stark... What? Yeah, they pronounce it, it sounds a bit like Arabic when they pronounce it, but we pronounce Hebrew all funny anyway, so... You know, when Hasidim pronounce Hebrew, it just sounds the same anyway, so... So, our pronunciation is very, you know, broad, let's put it that way, the Jewish people. Now, let's go on. Guys, focus. Mike Sav Ivri, I'm in the second, third line. Amar Rav Chisda, Ksav Libuna. So Rashi says it's big scripts, it's not the small Ktav Ashuri. I'm not getting into that now. Now we have a Machlokas Tanaim, and this becomes very important. Tanya. Rabbi Yossi says, Roi Haya Ezra Shitunat in Torah Al Yado, we saw this source last time, that's why I didn't give it to you in full. The Torah could have been given to Ezra. Il Malikad Moshe, if Moshe hadn't come first. And then there's the whole story of Moshe went up, Ezra went up, etc. we did last time. The Afal P, Shaloi Nitna Torah Al Yado, this is the end that you didn't see last time. Even though Ezra didn't get the Torah, Nishtane al yado haktav. The ktav, the script was changed at the time of Ezra. Shnei Amar, and it brings the posuk in Daniel. Now, did you get what this was referring to? Uktav hanishtanan. It talks about the change ktav. Katuv aramit umaturgam aramit. It says explicit there was a change ktav. Uktivan. It says v'lo chahalin ketava lemikre upishra lahoda alamalka. Did you get what they were talking about? Did you understand anything about that posuk? It's in Aramaic. Where will you find psukim in Aramaic in the Torah? It says where it's from. Where's it from? It's Daniel. Have you ever heard of the story of the writing on the wall at Belshazzar's feast?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is from... So you know something? Pick up a book of Daniel in English and read it one day. It's actually very interesting. Okay? One of the things that happened...
I know someone who's writing a Broadway show.
Okay, well, first of all, read the book in the Torah, and then you can think about the Broadway show. The Belshazzar was, of course, the king of Babel, and in the middle of his big feast, celebrating that he's 70 years after the prophecy, and the Beis HaMikdash won't be rebuilt, etc., into the room, says the Psukim, comes his hand, this finger, and writes on the wall... This is before the Purim story. And it writes these three words. What does it write on the words? What on the wall? Mene. Mene. Tekel. Ufarsin. Okay? Four words. Excuse me. Well, many was repeated twice. Four. So, no one could understand it. And that posik says, Belochalin ksava lemikre. The posik, no one could read the writing. And the question is, why could nobody read the writing? What, people can't read? Why can't people read? Uksiv, and it says, Uksav es Mishneh HaTorah Hazoi. So when it talks about the Torah in Devarim, it talks about Mishneh Torah. It says, Ksav haroye lehishtanot. A Ksav that would one day be changed. The Lama Nikra Ashurit. So why is it called Ashurit? Ksav Ksav today. Why is it called Ashurit? She'alei mehem mi'ashur. That it came from Ashur. So the Shita of Rav Yossi and Mar Ukva is that the original script that the Torah was written in was what script? Come on, girls. Ksav Ivri. It was the ancient script. The Torah was given in the ancient scripts, and it was eventually changed to the Assyrian scripts. And the reason it's called Ashur is because it comes from Ashur. Okay? According to this, what were the Luchos? What script were the Luchos? Ksav Ivri, the ancient Hebrew scripts. It sounds like. Now, that's not the end of the story. Look at number three. These sources are much shorter. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Rebbe, who is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi, he says no. B'tchila, b'chsav zenit natar Yisrael, originally the Torah was given in our current day script. It was given in ktav, what we call ktav Ashuri today. That was the original script. Kevin shechatu, when they sinned, it's not clear exactly from this what they sinned in, Nafach lehem le royetz. Royetz is the Ktav Ivri, the squiggly, squashed. Royetz means squashed. Okay? The squash scripts. Kiven shechazru behem, but when they did tshuva later, hechziron lehem, the old scripts, the original scripts, the one we have today, which was lost, was then returned to them. But lama nikra shema ashurit. So why is it called ashurit? If it doesn't actually come from Ashur, we originally had it. So what does he say? Shema usherit biktav. What does that mean? Usherit. It's the most rich. It's the most beautiful ktav. It's a much more beautiful, and it is a much more calligraphic, beautiful ktav than ktav ivri, which all looks like someone's just scrawled over the page. Yeah? An ant just crawled through the ink and crawled over your page. So, according to Rebbe Shita, the original, what was the Torah originally given in which script? Ktav Ashurit, the current one we have now. Then they sinned, and then it was taken away, and we ended up with Ktav Ivri, and that was used all that time, and eventually it was returned to the original script, which is a more beautiful script, but Chas V'Shalom that the original script was Ktav Ivri, it wasn't, it was Ktav Ashuri, which means the most beautiful script. Yes?
What do you mean, like, when they
send we'll get there, we'll get there. We'll talk about this. We'll look at the Rishonim.
Wait, what was the
we'll ask you a question in a minute. Oh, so let's get there as well. We'll see that. Number five. Number five is the final part of this sugya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Oimer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Parsa, She'omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amodai. So there's a list of names, and the ultimate one is Rabbi Elazar Amodai. Okay? This is his shita. Ksav zeh loy nishtane kol ika. There was never a change in Ksav. Okay? Shneemar vavei ha'amudim. It talks about the vavei ha'amudim. It talks about the hooks on the Mishkan. What's the letter vav look like? This. What does a hook look like?
A
vav. A vav. What is the name for a hook in Hebrew?
Oh, I know that.
What is the name for a hook in Hebrew? Vav. That is the name of a hook. Vav. Actually, it's with the comments, I think. So, in other words, a hook looks like a vav. Looks like a hook. It means a hook. And what does a vav do in terms of Hebrew? Ve'amar. It links it. It is a hook. It is a hook, as it were, linguistically it's a hook. So this is brilliant. A vav looks like a hook, it's called a hook, and it acts like a hook. So says the Gemara here, vav amudim, ma amudim loy nishtanu, just like the amudim of the Mishkan were never changed, they were never switched, they were what they were, whether they were square on the top or pointy on the top. That's a separate question, as you know. Afavim loy nishtanu. Similarly, the vav was never changed. The vav we had Hebrew and Hebrew we had, and it was all the way through. It was never taken away. But Oimen it says, "Vali Yudim kiksavam kilashoinam." The Yudim, the Jews, had their own ksav, their own language. Malashoinam loy nishtanu. Just like their language wasn't changed from Hebrew, it was always Hebrew. Af kisvam loy nishtanu. Similarly, their ksav wasn't changed. Three shitas. Again, to summarize. Rabbi Yossi's shita is that originally was the ancient Hebrew ksav, and it was changed to the modern ksav. Okay? And the Torah was originally given, it seems, in ancient Hebrew. According to the Rebbe's shita in the middle, actually it was originally given in the current ksav, and then it was changed to the ancient Hebrew, and then it was changed back again when we did tshuva, whatever that means, which we'll see in a minute. According to the final shita, Rabbi Elazar Modai, we always had the ksav we have now, we had it all the way through. Ah, what's the ancient Hebrew ksav? Was used for other things. Was used for mundane matters. It was a non-Jewish script that existed at the time, and we used it just like we use English. We write in English. We write in Russian. We write in Arabic. You know, we wrote in the other scripts as well. But that wasn't really our script. Our script was the same all the way through. Do you understand the three shittas? Avital, you happy? Okay. Yes.
I mean, the Ivri vav kind of looks like a hook as well.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it looks like this.
Yeah, I feel like it's even more of a hook.
Yeah, maybe.
That's kind of more of a hook than the regular
one. So the truth is, the things weren't always written exactly. Some of the versions, if you look to page 2, some of the versions of the vav look more like a hook than others. There's no question that the Ashuri one looks really like a hook. Okay, but I agree with you. I actually thought that the same thing when I was reading it. But clearly the Gemara's not making that point. It's making the other point, etc. The coin that I brought you was clearly the back of a modern shekel piece, which is based on a coin from Bar Kokhba, as far as I'm aware. It could be a Hasmonean coin, actually. Do you remember which it is? I didn't put it on the sheet. I just forgot it now. If it's either from the Chashmonaim, I think it's from the Chashmonaim, actually. I don't remember now, and you don't need to Google it. So it's a coin. It's an ancient coin, and they made the modern Hebrew coin look like that. And what does it spell? What does it spell on the back of the shekel?
Yehud.
No, that's coming up soon. Yehud. It spells Yehud from Yehuda, the country that existed there, Judea. Fine. So if you ever want to show anybody Ktav Ivri, you just need to pull out a coin from your pocket, a one shekel coin, and you can show them Ktav Ivri written on the coin and ask them if they can read it, etc., etc. It's right there, because this is our heritage on some level, at least according to some shittas, and certainly the modern Israeli state wanted to connect with that too. I brought you the whole alphabet there. You can learn it later on. See if you want to write people notes in Ktav Ivri. As I said, my son decided to learn this. It was a cool thing to do, and he writes little notes in Ktav Ivri to people who can't read them. Yes. Yes.
Why? I don't understand why they would need Ktav Ivri for the common people.
Why not?
When I get to a later stage in history, surely
we were upgraded.
Right, but we can upgrade to new language. But then we have
not new language, a new script.
A new script.
Impressive? Which, what do you mean impressive? You mean the ancient Hebrew script?
Right.
Why is it more impressive?
Because it's an ancient language.
Okay, so why do we go through just because it's ancient? We went to the Bible, we got upgraded.
And then, if that's what the original Torah was written in, then they're the only ones left that could still technically decipher the real Torah. The real Torah, I mean.
Right, but by the time we came back...
Why wasn't it left for everyone, but...
I'm not sure I exactly understand what you're asking. You're asking if the original Torah was given in Ksav Ivri, why was that downgraded for the everyday people?
Why wasn't it just that everyone still used Ksav Ivri, but there was also...
So I'm not sure. I don't know. But maybe you could link it with... But maybe we could link it with what we saw in Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, I'm not sure, last week, where we saw, or last session, where Rav Yaakov said when they came back for it to the Second Temple, they dafka wanted to do certain things to show to people that they were in Golas, and they weren't now back into a time of Geula. I'm just guessing, but maybe, I don't think he actually says this about the Ksav, but maybe the downgrade to the Ksav, as it were, was necessary in order to show people that this was a Golas, to remind them of Ashur, rather than to remind them of what was originally there. I don't know, I'm guessing. The truth is that most people who see in the Rishonim actually don't hold like that Shita. They hold like the Shita that the original Torah was given in the current script, and therefore your question doesn't become a question. It's actually an upgrade, not a downgrade, but we'll see that in a minute. But it's a good question if in that Shita, yes.
Have it ever used Nikodot?
In the what?
Does it use
Nikodot? No, neither does Ksav Ashuri. There was no such thing as Nukudot until the 8th, 9th century. They invented the system Nukudot in order to put across the Masorah. If we ever get our class trip together to see the Dead Sea Scrolls, I must remember, somebody remind me out of class to see if I can even organize that. I don't even know if it's feasible. Remind me, please, sir. None of it had Nukudot. Thank you. Remind me at the end, otherwise I'll interrupt the share. Okay? So... they didn't use Nukudot at all. Only later, when the codices were produced, they put in the Nukudot so that we could see exactly how it was pronounced. But nobody had Nukudot then. I don't know when the earliest example of Nukudot is found. We can ask that when we go see the Dead Sea Scrolls. Right. Now, there's a number of caches on the different shitas. Let's go, ladies. Yes. Sorry about that. Number 7. Let's go. Let's put some energy in this. We've got 25 minutes and we can really do an incredible amount with them. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. So there's a Gemara that seems to be a question on some of the shittas. Listen carefully and then tell me, honey, which shita this is going to be a problem for. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, B'shar she'ala Moshe l'maron, when Moshe went on high, says the Medrash, Matal HaKadosh Baruch Hu she'yoshiv koshik sarim la'osius. Remember, we saw this right at the beginning of the year. This was the beginning of the Gemara where Moshe sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu tying crowns onto the letters. Remember this? Hello? Remember this? Yeah. And then he asks him, why do you need to tie crowns? And he says, Rabbi Akiva's coming. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is tying crowns onto the letters, as it were, midrashically speaking, on Har Sinai, according to this, which is the original scripts? Ksav Ivri or Ksav Ashuri?
Ashuri.
There are no crowns on the ancient Hebrew scripts, only on the modern Hebrew scripts. And therefore, this seems to be very much going with either the second or the third Shita, which says that the original scripts was Hebrew. Remember the three shittas. The first one says ancient to modern. The third one says modern to ancient to modern. The second one, rather. The third one says there was never a change. So that's a kasha for Rabbi Yossi. Number 8. Amar Rav Chisda. Mem usamach shebeluchos b'neis hayo'imdim. This is a very famous medrash. What does this mean? The mem and the samach in the luchos were standing by a neis. Why? Because the writing was viewed from both sides. And the samach, you know, if it's on the luchos, and there was a samach, there was like, you know, a bit in the middle, which was like a bagel, you know, and it was somehow held in thin air. And the final mem, the same thing, you know? Now, according to this, Which was the language? Was the script of the Luchos, Ashuri or Ivri?
Ashuri.
Ashuri. These are all questions from the Gemara on the concept of the original Ksav being Ivri. But then look at number 9. Number 9 is such a nice source from the Yerushalmi. Amar Rebbe Levi, Manda Amar Roetz Nitna. Roetz, I got this wrong. Sorry. Well, it's Ksav Ashuri is not Roetz. Ratz is the Ksav Ivri. It was my mistake in the English underneath. Amar Rebbe Levi. So Rebbe Levi says, Manda Amar Lura'etz, according to the Shita that says that the Luchos were given in Ksav Ivri, Ayin Masa Nisim, the Ayin was hanging by a nace. What does an Ayin look like in Ksav Ivri? A Tamach. Yeah, and then it says, Manda Amar Ashuri Nitna, according to the view that says he was given in Ashuri, Samach Masa Nisim. So you see, the Gemara relates to the two Shitas, and it says that there is indeed a Shita, Rabbi Yossi, that says everything was originally given in ancient Hebrew scripts, therefore the miracle was for the Ayin, not for the Samach, because the Ayin looks in circle. Yes?
How can they both be true?
But of course you know and I know that they're not talking about a historical thing in this medrash, they're trying to communicate a philosophical point, yada 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 yada. Yes, it couldn't be both, clearly.
Which is
right, that we have to go back to our whole discussion about Eilu Ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim Hein, and you have to work out what's the point of us even learning this. Even if we only learn the men, forget about the Yerushalmi, even if we go to the Bavli, which tells us that the Samach was held by an ace. So again, what's the point? Who cares? Why do I need to know? Some historical quirk of it's clearly not a historical medrash. Why do I need to know? Well, because God's really brilliant that he can make a samach hang in the air. God created the entire universe. What do I need to see this for? There's obviously a point to this medrash. I don't know. I haven't learned the medrash. You know, we can sit down and we can work out how to decode this medrash. Why is it that there should be a writing which is viewable both ways? And there should be things that... Let's have a whole workshop on it. Look at all the mephorshim. Try and understand the deeper message behind it. I don't know. Every medrash should be treated that way. You know, when someone says at the Shabbos table, oh, don't you know that the Samach was hanging by an ace, and that's where the conversation ends, so an adult conversation should then spend, I suppose, an hour and a half talking about what that means. I mean, your soup might get cold, I suppose, but whatever. Now, let's quickly look at a few shittas in the Rishonim, and we'll see what happens. And some of these, I think, are really fascinating. The Rabbeinu Chananel, number 10. Let's just quickly look at this and see which way the Rishonim paskin, if there is a psak on this issue. Number 10. Ein halacha kamar ukva, he says very clearly. We don't follow mar ukva. Hannah, are you with us?
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Just making sure that you can knit and thing at the same time. Excellent. Okay, fine. She's giving me bad looks now. Ein halacha kamar ukva. The halacha is not like mar ukva. The hakaima ketanai. We're gonna pass him out the other tonight. But like Rebbe Yossi, so he very clearly says, as far as we're concerned, the original Luchos were given in Ksav, Ashuri. We do not pass him like Rebbe Yossi, we pass him like the others, and he basically goes through three or four lines explaining why we have to pass him like the others, and you know, when I asked, I went to one of the teachers that teaches in Neve, and there's a lot of Kiruv programs that has these, you know, the ideas, the mystical ideas of the Hebrew letters. They're really fascinating, and people find them really cool, and all that. And I asked him, you know, what happens if the Torah was originally given in Ksav Ashuri, Ksav Ivri, your whole series of Shirim is blown out of the water? And he said to me, yeah, but pretty much everybody says that the halacha is that they weren't given that way. Oh, but what about the shita that they were given that way? So we'll see that right now. The Gemara in Megillah, for example, says, number 11, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, V'itema Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. Menatzpach, what's Menatzpach?
Commandments.
Yeah, the Sophie letters. Menatzpach, Tzofim Amru. The final letters. Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, Chaf. Okay? The final letters were given by the Tzofim. Who are the Tzofim? Not the scouts. Okay? Who are the Tzofim? It's another word for the Nevi'im. Okay? They were given by the Nevi'im. V'tisbara, does that make sense? Doesn't it say, Eilu ha-mitzvahs, these are the mitzvahs, what it says in the Torah, these are the mitzvahs, she'ein novi reshai l'chadesh davar mi'ata. If you're a novi, you can't bring in a new thing. How can the Nevi'im bring in new letters? This is very much the Rambam Shita that Torah Misina is not through the Nevi'im. Ella, what happened really, shachachum, they had them originally, they lost them, v'chazra v'yasem, and the prophets brought them back. Whose shita is that? Are there final letters in Ksav? The Rebbe, the second shita, meaning there are no final letters in Ksav Ivri, only in Ksav Ashuri. So it's saying they started with one, they went to the other, and they went back to the other one. Fine, that seems to support that very clearly. It comes in the Ritzvah. And he gives a more, of, if you like, a more hashkafic point as well. Number 12. I'll read bits of this, not all of it. V'zeh teim godl. I'm astounded, he says. She'eksav zeh ha-mushar. She'yesh b'chol kites v'kites m'menu. Tilim, tilim shel halachas. Our beautiful scripts, which have so many millions of Kabbalistic resonances. And that script, okay? Shel halachas yisodis ha-tar eksav. Shel b'nei ashur. That comes from the Assyrians. Really? That we got that ksav from the non-Jewish Assyrians? The luchos miksav ivri, and then the luchos were in ksav ivri. He said, I find that astounding. V'oid miksav ivri, manei taya b'mem v'samach. If they were in ksav ivri, what's the nes was there with the samach and the mem? Interesting. I wonder if the Ritva had access to the Yerushalmi that we saw in number 9 that answers that question. It doesn't sound like he did. Yeah, come from the, according to the first shita, Rabbi Yossi's shita, the whole thing, the script that we use today, all comes from the non-Jews. Our Sefer Torah, all written in non-Jewish scripts. Our beautiful shirim about the Hebrew language, all based on non-Jewish scripts. So that makes no sense to me. Aval vadai ein sofik shezeh ksav nikra ashuris huksav hakodesh sheveluchos v'al shem kach nikra kodesh. He says, no, the ksav hakodesh is the ksav that was written on the luchos. He clearly says that this is the way that we go. This is the shita. That the original language was Ashuris. Okay, Loshon HaKodesh, similarly Hebrew. Oilam lo nira ksav ahu ela beluchos. Says, but he gives an explanation. The ksav, our ksav that we have today, which was the original ksav, was only on the luchos. They didn't use it for anything else, he wants to say. It was just on the luchos. It existed. It was the ksav with which the Ten Commandments was given. But everything else was written in ksav ivri. Was written in ksav ivri. Even the Sifrei Torah. Have a Lashon HaKodesh fan. No, the Lava is Hebrew as a language. No, he's saying it wasn't non-Jewish. He's saying it's not possible it was non-Jewish. Really, and I think he's saying this even in Rabbi Yossi's Shita, the original Luchos were given in Ksav Ashuri. But really, that's the only thing that was used for Ksav Ashuri in the entire world. Everything else was Ksav Ivri. I mean, you can decide whether you think this is feasible or plausible, but he's saying everything else was Ksav Ivri, even the Sifrei Torah. Hebrew as a language, of course, was spoken already from the Avot. That makes sense. Hebrew was a language without the scripts. Ubnei Yisrael Kodem Matan Torah. Uboy Hashem Medaber Im Nevi'ei V'Kudosh. And of course, God communicates with the Nevi'im in Hebrew. Because of the beauty and the holiness of the Ksav, Fahu, Ba'isan Yamim, Loi Haya Kosim Yosa Afilu B'Tzvarim. Even the Sfarim, what does Sfarim mean? What? No, Sfarim means?
Torah.
Torah scrolls. Even Torah scrolls, he says, even the Sefer Shekosef HaMelech, what's the Sefer Shekosef HaMelech?
The king's
personal Sefer. Or Kol Echad Ve'echad La'atmai Ela HaYikosef HaSef Ksav Ivri. They would write them in Ksav Ivri because the holiness of Ksav Ashuri was only on the Luchas. So what does he say? He says, when the Aron Kodesh was taken away or hidden and we didn't have access to the Luchas, So what happened to our knowledge of Ksav Ashuri? It was gone. It was finished. In other words, according to the Ritva, the only thing that had Ksav Ashuri on it was the Luchos. So once the Luchos were out of play, if you like, all that was left was Ksav Ivri, and therefore we reverted basically just to Ksav Ivri until we brought back Ksav Ashuri from the Golas in Ashur. Now the question is, the question on him is, so how did they have Ksav Ashuri when we didn't? And it was restored. Ksav Ashuri was restored. But according to him, the only thing he was originally on was the Luchos. So the question he has to answer, which he tries to answer, but he struggles with, is, well, where did they get the knowledge of the language that we brought back from Ashur? How did they have all this access to the Ksav Ashuri when we no longer had it? So he wants to say, look, you know, they copied it originally, they took it to Ashur, but it's a little bit unstable, the answer as to how they had it and we didn't have it. But his shita basically very clearly is, according to everybody, the original Luchos were. By the way, I'm not going to read it inside, you probably never got to it, number 16, which I'm not going to read now, his shita, the Sefer HaIkrim, the Radvaz, is a very beautiful shita. His shita is that the original Luchos were given in Ksav Ashuri, but then when the people sinned, and this Nedivah is partly the answer to your question. When the people did the Avera of the Cheta Egel, Ksav Ashuri, like the Ritzvah says, the same thing. Ksav Ashuri was so Kodesh that the Ksav Ashuri couldn't anymore cope, if you like, with the Egel, with the Chet of the people, and therefore the Luchos collapsed. That's what it means in the Medrash, the Ksav, if you like, flew away, meaning that the Ksav was no longer capable of being given to these people. So the second Luchos, says the Radvaz, was written in Ksav Ivri. That way, by the way, you can also shtim the Yerushalmi, because now you have one set of Luchos in Ashuri, one set of Luchos in Ivri, and he says, that's why it says, and it's actually a very beautiful Ksav, it says, that's why it says to Moshe Rabbeinu, the things that were on the first Luchos, the ideas, the words, I want you to write on the second Luchos, but not the same script, he says. And Moshe, who wrote the first Luchos? God. Who wrote the second Luchos? Moshe. And therefore he says, it wasn't just that one wrote one and one wrote the other, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu produced the first Luchos as a master, if you like, a Nisi, it was miraculous, with the Ksav Ashuri. And Moshe carved out Ksav Ivri on the second Luchos.
So what was the Teshuva that brought it back?
Ah, so you have, I suppose you have to say for that the tshuva was the coming back. Remember when, this fits perfectly with Rav Tzadok HaKohen. I never thought of it until now. Remember it says that the people had to have the mountain held over their head to force them to accept the Torah. Even the Kabbalah Torah was not real, as partly evidenced by the Chet HaEgel that came immediately afterwards. So when does the real Kabbalah Torah Kimu v'kiblu. When did that happen?
Purim.
Where was Purim? Out there in Ashur, in Bavel. So the real tshuva, the Jewish people, we learned this in Torah Shabbat in terms of accepting the implications of Har Sinai, the real tshuva was after the Golas, they came back, so maybe now they're on a level that they're able to have the Ksav Ashuri. It fits beautifully. That's the tshuva. Because they're back to a level where they really are prepared to be Makabal the Torah properly. I'm not sure, I'm guessing. But I think it fits very nicely in that. Yes. Yes, Michal.
But then, if they sinned with the golden calf and then it was taken away from them,
yes.
Today, are we really that much of a better generation than
Okay, good question. I don't know. Yes, no. You know, we don't. We're not over the Avodah Zorah and Shlichus Damim and things like that. But on the other hand, how can we even compare ourselves? That's a much bigger question in how your Yiddish Haderos works, and I'm not getting into it right now. It's just a massive question. It needs a whole three shirim on what is the concept of Yiddish Haderos, what does it mean we go down, how are we dwarves on the shoulders of giants, and what are the implications to that. It's good, but I can't go there in 10 minutes. Yeah.
Is this
sort
of the concept of, like, people only speaking Yiddish, who clearly
Yes. Hebrew? Yes, that is a lie. The idea that Hebrew is a Lashon HaKodesh, there's a machlokes, by the way, between the Rambam and the Ramban, as to why Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh. I think I mentioned this. Mm-hmm. Rambam says Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh because there are no words in it which are vulgar. I'm sure I mentioned this, no?
Yeah.
Whereas Ramban says Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh because that's the language with which the world was created. Al-Pi Kabbalah, these mystical ideas. And therefore, if you say that there's intrinsic Kedusha to the language of Hebrew, so that's why people are reluctant to speak it, they speak Yiddish. Although there are less and less people who do that. You go down Meir Shearim now, you don't hear anything like as much Yiddish, in my opinion, as you used to do. If you're interested in a very interesting book, said interesting too many times there, but you know what I mean, that deals with whether you see intrinsic Kedusha or whether it's like Lashon HaKodesh because there's no vulgarity, there's a wonderful book called Maimonides' Confrontation with Mysticism by Menachem Kellner, which picks six or seven topics, one of which is Lashon HaKodesh, Hebrew language, and looks at different perspectives on it. If you want to know the name of that book, I'll give you it afterwards. Now, the last couple of things. You should just know the Sefer HaIkrim, on page 3, he very much goes down the first shita of that everything was given in Ksav Ivri. Just look at 13 for a second. Ukaasha alami Babel, when they came from Babel, Ra'ula sa zeche le geula hashenit, they wanted to make a zeche to the geula. They did that in two ways. Ha'echad, one of them was shehiniku sav ivri. Okay, they put aside sav ivri. Ubachru lahem ksav ashuri. And they picked Ksav Ushuri. Why? Why did they pick a non-Jewish script? Zecher, as a remembrance, Shegolu El Asher V'Niglu Misham. This is your question, Michal, really, from before. Why, I think it was Michal's question, why would they pick that script to come back? So the Sefer Ikram has a completely different approach, totally different from the other people we've seen. He says, really, the original script was Ksav Ivri, but then they picked Ksav Ashuri because they wanted to bring something back from the Golas to remind them of the Geula. It's almost the opposite point of Rav Yaakov. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says they brought stuff back to remind them that they were still in Golas in Israel. And Rav Sefer Ikram says they brought stuff back to remind them they were no longer in Golas, in Ashur. Which is fascinating. Maybe this is reflective of the whole machlokes that we see at a Yom HaZeh. Are we in Golas? Are we not in Golas? Are we in Geula? Are we in the beginning? Like it's an old conversation. Every conversation we have today is an old conversation. People just think it's a new conversation. So he says, the Chayn Amu Rabbi Seinu, but Tosefta, the Masechet Sanhedrin, Lama Nikra Shema Ashur is Sha'ala Mehemi Ashur. He takes the view totally that the script came from the non-Jews in Ashur. Rebbe Omer, Bikstav Zed, Nithna Tara Lisra, and he brings the other Shita as well. Yaduah Hu She'ein Divri Rebbe, Shehu Yachid, B'machem Divri Chachamim Klum. Says Rebbe Shita, which is we had it from the beginning and then he was lost and come back. He said, we can't pass in like a single opinion when there are others that disagree, the Rabbim. Boy, the Gemara Sanhedrin, Peri Koy Godel, Peri Sha Amurayim, Divri Chachamim. Shikach Amru Sham, Amar Rav Chisda, and he brings Rav Chisda, Mar Ukva. He says the Amorayim go more with the Shita of originally within Ksav Ivri. So I hope you're getting a kind of a feel for this. Such an interesting sugya, and it really goes to the roots of a lot of the things that we originally had in the Torah. So, I mean, no one's debating the content of the Torah, no one's debating the language of the Torah, they're debating the Ksav of the Torah and how that works and the relevance it has. I just want to finish with this little thing about the two little things. First of all, the Ramban. Did you read this Ramban in number 14? There's a really interesting Ramban. The Ramban in his Peirush on the Chumash. The Ramban made Aliyah when he was in his, like very old. From where? Where did he live? The Ramban? Spain. That's what you were about to say. Spain, Nachmanides. He lived in Spain. He was an old man. He came to live in Israel. He says, Barcheni Hashem, God has, what's that? 14. Barcheni Hashem, God has blessed me. Ad koi, so much. Zechiti ubati la'akko. I've managed to come and live in Akko. Okay? I don't know. Today I'm spoiled. I wouldn't feel as blessed to live in Akko. But the Ramban says, Akko, Ir HaKodesh. I don't know, Akko. I mean, I prefer to live in Yerushalayim than Akko. But Ramban didn't have a choice. And Akko, compared to Spain, Akko was like Eretz Yisrael. He lived to live in Akko. U'matzati sham b'yad ziknei ha'aretz. I found there with the elders of Akko, non-Jewish people, because there were no Jews there. Okay. Matbeya kesef. I found some coins, he says. Mufutach p'tuchei chotim, which were stamped. Mitzido ha'echad. On one side, he says, ke'ein makel, was some kind of a stick, shaked like what's a shaked? An almond. Umitzidoi ha'sheni. And on the second side, ke'ein tzeluchit, some kind of a bowl. Ubishnei atzadim, saviv. And round each side, he writes in his parish, kasav miputua, mufutach, be'er heitiv, was something stamped in language. The Heru HaKsav Lekutim. Who did he show the language to? The Kutim. Because it was Ksav Ivri. He couldn't read Ksav Ivri. So he took it to the Kutim. The Karohu Miyad. And they straight away read it. They immediately read it. Ki hu Ksav Ivri. Asher Nisha Lekutim. It was written in Ksav Ivri. Kemosh Yugazor. The Karohu Ebin. And said, Ksav Ekal. It says Shekel HaShkalim. One side said Shekel HaShkalim, and the other side said Yerushalayim HaKadosha. This was an ancient coin. If you look in the top of page 4, you'll see that these are the coins that the Ramban found. I mean, this is not a picture of those coins, but these are the coins he was talking about, which are coins on which is written. You can see exactly what he was saying. One of the coins had like a bowl on one side. The other side had like the split. I think they're actually pomegranates, as opposed to almonds, but they look like flowers, if you like. And these are the coins that he was using. What's fascinating, guys, is that he used these coins to paskin halachic shilas on the actual weight of certain weights and measurements in halacha. Because he says these were ancient coins and these were evidence as to what the actual weight was.
This is
a massive issue on the issue. Do we use archaeology to paskin shilas? Right. And clearly here the Ramban did use an ancient coin to paskin a modern day Shiloh based on the evidence. I went to a place, guys, you must go here. Go back to Brooklyn, Ir HaKodesh. You see the beginning and the end of the Shir is Brooklyn. Brooklyn has a beautiful museum there. There's a guy there called Schwartz, maybe. Schwartz? Rabbi Schwartz. He runs something called the Living Torah Museum. Okay? He has their stuff that makes your mind boggle. Apart from all the stuffed animals, which is his thing that he's into. He does salvage works from shipwrecks. And he gets them, he funds them, they're millions of dollars. They bring up ships from the Mediterranean, and he sells up all the non-Jewish stuff because he's not interested in it, to fund the salvage operation, and he keeps the Jewish stuff. He had, in that little museum in Brooklyn, when I went there 3 or 4 years ago, he had the only example in the world of an ancient litra. A litra is a measurement Chazal talk about, linked to the word liter today. And there's a massive machlokas between Rashi and other people, what is the weight of this thing? He said, here, look, here it is. Pick one up and see. He has original Machzit HaShekel from the Beis HaMikdash. From the Second Temple period. Half shekel pieces.
Why isn't it here?
So he had just fought. He has the oldest written version of the Ten Commandments in the world.
Wow.
In the museum in Brooklyn. He just fought a major legal action with the Hebrew University. Or was it the Israel Museum, excuse me. The Israel Museum. Who claimed they should be in Israel. And he just won when I was there. They stayed in Brooklyn. You can go and have that argument with him. But you must go to that museum, guys. Okay, guys, you can have that argument with each other over lunch. The last thing I just want to say to you guys, this will leave you thinking. I mean, you'll think anyway, but this will leave you thinking about something else. In Appendix 1, I just brought you, and just before you pack away, just listen to this. I'm not going to read any more sources. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Malach to put a tap. A tav. Okay? What's a tav? A tav is the word tav, but it's also a mark. It's a mark. It means a symbol. On the heads of all the tzaddikim that were going to be saved during the destruction of the first temple. Now, a tav in Ksav Ivri is an X. Okay? And an X, the idea of X marks the spot. The idea of the cross, the X, is extremely ancient and is a Jewish idea. It's the letter Tav in Ksav Ivri. In fact, when the Kohanim were anointed, it says they were anointed with the symbol of this X symbol, which is the Tav, which is the classic mark on their heads. And therefore, Ksav Ivri actually has a... Even, I think, Lahavdil, the Christian idea of the cross, is an adaptation of the idea of the Ksav Ivri Tav. Yeah, but there are Christian crosses that look like this as well. They don't all look like the other one. The point here is there's so much to say here, and you're going to remind me of the important thing. Okay, fine. What I'd like to just give you before you leave, or you can take one as you go out of the door, please take both of these from these piles. What is this? This is the next exciting topic that we need to deal with, which is the missing 164 years. Both of these are articles by Rav Shimon Schwab. One was where he gave his thesis. The other one where the public forced him to retract it, but then he says it all over again, okay? I'd like you to please read these. They're not long. This one's very short, like 2 pages, this one's about 10. Between now and Sunday we're having the next year, so you've got 5-6 days to read them. Please read them and we'll talk about them next time. I'm going to put them by the door. Have a lovely day.